All right, now the lab part today, very simple. We're only starting an experiment today. We're not ending it. But we're doing forensic DNA fingerprinting. And DNA fingerprinting has nothing to do with actual fingerprints. It's just they use the word fingerprint just simply by analogy with real fingerprinting, just because it's a way to be able to tell the identity of a person, but using DNA instead of actual fingerprints. Anyway, DNA fingerprinting involves comparing, just like real fingerprinting, DNA fingerprinting involves comparing a person's DNA, which you can obtain a sample of, from DNA that is obtained, for instance, at a crime scene. That's what we are pretending that happened here, some sort of crime scene. Okay? DNA evidence can be obtained from a crime scene, and you can use DNA fingerprinting to either eliminate certain suspects or to even suspect them further. Now, DNA fingerprinting does not definitely say that a suspect whose DNA matches is that suspect, at least not at the level we're doing it in here. But if it doesn't match, then that is enough to say that suspect is not the one that this DNA came from. Okay? So basically, if you think about it in terms of giving the person life imprisonment or not, you're not sure that they're guilty if it matches. But you are sure that they're not guilty if it doesn't match. All right? Now, listen carefully on how we're doing this, because part of it's been done for you. It tells you to get colored tubes, and the colored tubes are up here. So each group needs to get all different kinds of tubes here, which there are seven kinds, as listed here: green, pink, orange, violet, green, blue, orange, violet, pink, yellow, but also a clear one that is labeled enzyme, ENZ, on the top. When you get one of each of these for each group, the colored ones are going to look empty to you. They're not empty. They look empty because the guy that prepares the lab already delivered 10 microliters of the correct stuff into each tube. So in other words, he already did number 1 and 2 for you. But 10 microliters is not very much, right? That's why it's going to look like these things are empty. But there's a tiny drop in there somewhere. Your job is to mix the enzyme with that from the enzyme tube, put it into the colored tube, and mix it. Which is why it's really important for that tiny drop not to be up on the side, sticking to the side somewhere. You want that drop to be at the bottom. So what's the best way of doing that? Not with a pipette. Not vortex it. Centrifuge it. Exactly. So these colored tubes, all of which have 10 microliters in them somewhere, you want that drop to be on the bottom. Therefore, balance them, put them in opposite sides of the centrifuge, and centrifuge them for, 5 to 10 seconds. That should be enough to shove it all the way to the bottom. Then you can go on to step 3, which is to take 10 microliters of your enzyme out of the white one and put it into each of the other ones. Okay, now you want that to mix well. So after you put the enzyme in, it's only 10 microliters also, which isn't all that much. So you want to force it down to the bottom too. So centrifuge it, put enzyme in it, close it back up, put it back in the centrifuge, centrifuge it again. Okay? That will mix the two together. I mean, that will force them into one droplet at the bottom. Okay. That really is all you need to do today for we're going to incubate these things at 37, which he doesn't have set up, so I guess we're going to incubate them at room temperature overnight. Okay? So 5, 6, and 7, you also don't have to worry about, because the gels will be for next time. All you need to do is carefully mix this stuff. But if you don't carefully mix it, it's not going to turn out right. So take the extra 1 minute that it takes to carefully centrifuge things and do it right. Now, the reason that we're doing this, by the way, each of the ones that starts with an S, so there's S1 through S5, those are 5 different suspects. So each tube contains different DNA. DNA from 5 different people. All right? CS contains DNA that was found at the crime scene. So the whole idea here is to use fingerprinting to see whether any of these 5 suspects' DNA matches the DNA of the crime scene. And the way that we're going to do that is not actually really by going in and looking at the sequence of DNA, and this is why we can't say with certainty that a match means that you have guilt. We're going to do this electrophoretically, meaning via electrophoresis. So, you'll have crime scene. This is a first well. I'm only going to draw a few wells, but you would actually have 6 wells, 5 suspects plus a crime scene. Anyway, this first one is crime scene. The DNA that was obtained from that crime scene is going to be broken into little pieces. The reason it's going to be broken into little pieces is so that when you put it into an electrophoresis gel, it will produce several different bands, right, based on the size of those pieces. So you'll have whatever number of bands placed however they come about. If there's a match, if the suspect is truly guilty, then the suspect would have the same exact DNA that was found at this crime scene, right? And therefore, if you break it the same way into the same size chunks, you should have exactly the same bands in that one, right? Whereas you might have one band the same in another one, however many bands there are, but not all of them would match if the person had different DNA. Well, this is true only if you're breaking up the DNA, not randomly, but according to certain specifications. So this one that's marked enzyme, what kind of enzyme do you suppose that is?
It's a restriction enzyme.
Right, it's a restriction enzyme. A restriction endonuclease. And how do restriction endonucleases operate?
They cut out specific sequences.
Not codons, but specific sequences of nucleotides within DNA. What are those? What are those sequences that an endonuclease is? What are the sequences that an endonuclease recognizes called? They are palindromes, but because the enzyme recognizes them, they're called recognition sites. Right? That's why you're not just randomly cutting this thing into pieces. You're very precisely cutting it only at the recognition sites that the enzyme recognizes. So if you have a long sequence of nucleotides, which a DNA molecule is, if somewhere in that sequence there is a recognition site, let's just say for simplicity that the enzyme recognizes CCT. By the way, the other strand is there as well, so that would be, even though that one's not a palindrome, we're going to pretend it is, okay? But if it's CCT in one band, I mean one strand, it's going to be GGA in the other one. This is what the recognition site looks like for the enzyme we're pretending. And in that whole long sequence of DNA that's taken from the individual and from the crime scene, if the enzyme finds that, which is right here, it's going to cut it. If it doesn't find it, it's not going to cut it. All right? Well, if two DNA, I mean, if you get the same sample from the same person twice, once at the crime scene and once when you sample him, it's going to be the same sequence in both cases. And therefore, when you expose it to the enzyme that looks for that specific sequence, it's going to cut the same DNA in exactly the same places. And therefore, it's going to make the same exact number of pieces, and each piece is going to be exactly the same size. Does that make sense? That's why you would have identical banding. But it is possible... Well, and that's why if they don't match, you definitely don't have the same person. But it's possible for another sequence to have this recognition site exactly in the same place in the overall molecule, but then all these other nucleotides to be different. You see what I'm saying? It would still be CCT here, but these other ones would be whatever else. That's a different person, right? Because it's a different sequence of nucleotides. They just happen to have the recognition site be in the same place. And that's how you could have non-identical DNA from an innocent person still be cut into the same number and sizes of DNA that you find at the crime scene. Because we're not looking at the sequence, we're only looking at the size of the pieces. Okay, does that make sense? That's why you can't hang the dude, or the chick, although it's usually a dude, just based on electrophoresis like this. If you do get a complete match, that's evidence that you should spend the extra time and money to go in and look at the actual sequence. If the actual sequence matches, there's no doubt other than identical twin. Okay? So that's why you want to have a careful preparation so that you get good results for your gel that we'll do next time. And that way you'll be able to make the decision whether or not you should get life in prison with a clear conscience. All right, go ahead and carefully mix and then push your chairs in.